Welcome to episode 4 of Contagion Community, the new health equity podcast where we talk with experts about the social factors that create and widen infectious disease disparities. I'm John Parkinson, and I'm your host for today's episode. Antimicrobial resistance has been an emerging public health problem for some time. A global analysis published in The Lancet back in January estimated that antimicrobial resistance was the leading cause of death worldwide in 2019. Investigators estimated that resistance itself caused 1.27 million deaths that same year, and that antimicrobial resistant infections played a role in 4.95 million deaths. It has been something the medical community knows it needs to focus on, and have developed antimicrobial stewardship programs at hospitals and medical centers. Another issue within the issue has been antibiotic development. Many of the larger pharmaceutical companies have left antibiotic development altogether. With it taking so many years to develop new therapies, antibiotics have been taken over by smaller independent companies. Add in the COVID-19 pandemic, and you have this significant health topic put on the back burner for 2 years. The good news is there are signs today it is once again becoming a priority as public health discussions arise on the topic. Both the pharmaceutical industry and non-government organizations are deeply involved in development and trying to fight antimicrobial resistance. Today, I'm talking with Dr. Evan Lowe, who is the CEO of Paratek Pharmaceutical. Lowe's company is involved in antibiotic development and has a deep interest in antimicrobial resistance and a particular bill in Congress, the Disarm Act. Congress currently has two legislative bills, the aforementioned Disarm Act and the Pasteur Act, which both are looking to address antibiotic resistance by addressing incentives for antibiotic development and reimbursement. Lowe talks from his unique perspective of trying to develop antibiotics as a small biopharmaceutical company, the congressional bills and how they complement each other, and positive steps on how antimicrobial resistance can be addressed. Antibiotics are often being developed by smaller pharmaceutical companies. Can you talk about the disparity in who is developing antibiotics and why that is?
Hi, John. Good morning, and thanks for the opportunity to be here today. I'm very pleased to have this conversation with you. You know, it's a very, very exciting space in terms of the science and what we're able to provide for patients in terms of these being very clearly and unambiguously life-saving therapies. The challenge here today is that the innovation, 90% of the innovation really resides in small biotech companies. The large pharmaceutical companies have essentially exited out of research and development, and they've really left as a recognition of a broken reimbursement system that is unfortunately geared towards restricting access to novel antibiotics, and that does not really recognize the life-saving value of these particular products. And it is unfortunate. That all being said, doesn't dissuade me from my passion in terms of taking on what we're doing today.
Absolutely. And as the CEO of a biopharmaceutical company that you're working on getting antibiotics to market, what are your frustrations related to in terms of development?
Well, I know that this conversation today will not only talk about the antibiotic development space to get products to FDA approval, John, it will also, I think it's important for us to make sure that we talk about what's happening to these companies after they get their FDA approval in the commercialization space. When we look at the development space, I think that what's really important here is for us to remember that the utilization of antibiotics today, based upon what I think has been a very positive evolution in antibiotic stewardship, as in many ways, guardians of the right antibiotic for the right patient at the right time, has led to these products really being used sparsely and in a volume that really reflects a utilization that's very similar to what's seen in rare diseases and in orphan diseases. And I think one of my frustrations really is that I think the FDA has an opportunity here to evolve its regulatory guidance to recognize that fact. And what do I mean by that? Well, I think there's opportunities here to for the FDA to consider pathogen-specific claims in a much more, I think, innovative regulatory guidance pathway, as opposed to the still tissue-based claims, such as a skin infection or pneumonia or a urinary tract infection. And because of the lack of evolution of the regulatory pathways, they're still very large, costly and time-consuming resources in order to complete those trials for the initial FDA approval. I think there could be also some evolution in terms of thinking about rare diseases in a way that, you know, there could be provisional approvals after a phase two trial with confirmatory trials afterwards, similar to what's done in oncology. And the final aspect of, I think, where there could be some positive, I think, momentum generated for these small companies in terms of their capital requirements is to also think about regulatory evolution with regards to the manufacturing requirements for antibiotics, more akin to the scale and the size in a much more focused way of orphan diseases.
Some really good points there. And the term evolution on the regulatory side is very interesting. And you know, I think it's one of the things here that when we're talking about antibiotics and obviously their significance in life-saving, one of the things that we have been really challenged with of recent years is looking at antimicrobial resistance. And in looking at that, I wanted to get your perspective and see what you think are the greatest challenges within this area.
Well, when you think about antimicrobial resistance, and for your listeners, what does that really mean? Well, it simply means that bugs always win. And what do I mean by that? It means that bacteria have a way to evolve to survive. We've been able to see that with the current COVID virus, and it's no different for bacteria. They want to survive just like we do. And I think in the context of bugs always win, what does that demand from us as an innovative drug development sector is that we have to stay ahead of the innovation curve. And today, because of the, I think, where we are today, that bugs always win requires us as a society to be ahead of that innovation curve. Unfortunately, with the sector being so broken, fragile, and failing, there may come a time very soon where we're back into that pre-penicillin era. And I think that that is something that we, not only us in the U.S. alone, I think we can't forget about the fact that antimicrobial resistance is a global issue. Bacteria, just like viruses, don't care about borders, and they're happy to traffic wherever we take them. And so I think we really do need to be ahead of that innovation curve, and we are clearly falling behind that innovation curve today, John.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's scary to think of, you know, a time where we could be, as you said, pre-penicillin. And, you know, I think an important aspect is, you know, the United States really leads the world in trying to innovate. And I think one of the things that we're looking at right now, and one way that can help in innovation, is there's a bill in Congress called the Disarm Act. And for those not familiar with it, can you provide an overview of it and what the act is and where it is in Congress?
Yeah, the Disarm Act is something that, you know, we have worked on through a coalition of small biotech companies. We're known as the Antimicrobials Working Group. And so today, a coalition of about 13, 14 of us who are just trying to work together to get that message to Congress about the importance of the need for a hand up with regards to helping the sector, the marketplace specifically in this commercialization space, for it to be a marketplace that's dynamic and that recognizes innovation. We as small companies, based upon our technology, are happy to compete based upon antibiotics that are better with regards to efficacy, better with regards to safety, and better with regards to tolerability. And unfortunately, today in the hospital setting, there is something called diagnostic related group payments, which are bundled payments for the care of, let's say, someone who comes in with a pneumonia. Included within that are antibiotics. And the antibiotic costs are part of that bundled cost. And hospitals today, based upon their challenges and diminishing margins, based upon the pressures that they're under, are looking for ways to save money. And as part of that, they are very interested in asking the question, can we save money on antibiotics and the use of antibiotics? The Disarm Act is aimed at trying to create a separate payment scheme for antibiotics that is based upon the average sales price that is marketed throughout the U.S. And in that way, the Disarm Act will take away cost as being the primary driver in our experience today for the allowance of antibiotics to even get on a hospital formulary for doctors to have a choice to consider using these antibiotics. Today, unfortunately, formularies are using cost as the primary decision algorithm as to whether they would allow a novel antibiotic that has better efficacy, better tolerability, and better safety than the ones that are available today. But they're using cost as a way to essentially restrict access to near zero for these new antibiotics. So if you come in with a resistant bacteria that's causing a life-threatening infection, doctors won't even have the option to choose one of these innovative antibiotics because it won't be available in the hospital today. So this Disarm Act is meant to open up that space and provide a hand up specifically for these biotech companies to be able to actually go to these formularies to have a decision made based upon improved efficacy, improved safety, and improved tolerability, and not have cost be the first decision and the only decision algorithm, it seems to me today, that hospitals are making in order to allow antibiotics to be on the hospital formulary.
Absolutely. And you had mentioned cost in hospital formularies. Are there any other particular areas within the bill you think will be a real difference maker?
I think what that is really, I think it really is cost at the end of the day, John. And it's an unfortunate first algorithm that's actually used. If we were to think about your mother, father, brother, sister, grandmother, or grandfather, and they had a life-threatening infection, I think we would really all want the choice to be made upon the most potentially effective antibiotic in the armamentarium to be given to our loved one. And today, based upon the dynamics of hospital formularies and hospital cost containment considerations for their own survival, they're not even allowing our antibiotics to even be on the formulary for consideration. And I think that's heartbreaking. And I just want to ask society writ large, is that okay?
Yeah, really good question. And certainly a challenge that, you know, these companies are having to deal with. And looking at another bill in Congress, the Pasteur Act, it is another one that is related to antibiotic development and looking at that. Can you talk a little bit about how the Disarm and the Pasteur Acts complement each other?
Well, the Pasteur Act and the Disarm Act are very complementary. I think the Disarm Act, still looking at reimbursement reform, is fundamental to ensuring that there's a dynamic, vibrant, sustainable marketplace, because those type of reimbursement decisions are applicable across every antibiotic that might come forward, and incents the companies to provide antibiotics with better efficacy, better safety, and better tolerability, as I said earlier. The Pasteur Act also looks at this commercialization space after approval and asks the question, well, is there an opportunity here for Medicare and Medicaid recipients to actually have access through a government-sponsored purchase program where the government would purchase a set amount of doses of your antibiotic and would allow those doses then to be put into hospitals to be utilized for Medicare and Medicaid patients. And in so doing, these upfront purchases would then allow companies to have an upfront amount of capital that wasn't predicated on what we're going through today at Paratech, which is a very long, very difficult, and very complicated process to go hospital by hospital by hospital in order to get formulary listing for our newly approved antibiotic. I think they are both complementary. I think they solve different pieces. I think the Pasteur Act really is a bridge to allow companies to have the ability to solve for time in order to do their other work on the for the commercial payers in order to get reimbursement there and ultimately to create enough formulary access for their newly approved antibiotics to be considered by physicians whenever someone comes in and there's a fear of a potential resistant pathogen there.
Well said, and certainly looking at it as two aspects from different ways of helping to try to offer some solutions and strategies. And at the moment, there's congressional inertia, and it appears to be preventing movement on both these acts from getting passed. Are there any strategies or anything behind the scenes that are going on that to help maybe move the needle and help move things along?
I think that, Congress has, a myriad number of very important issues for the U.S. civilian population that they're dealing with. Unfortunately, I think COVID has taken the wind out of all of these conversations. I think if it's not COVID specific or COVID related, I do think that there is much less attention that's coming towards the AMR space. I think based upon the lobbying work that we've done, I think there's a lot of awareness and a lot of alignment about the importance of AMR writ large. I just wonder where it is on the priority chain in terms of having some type of legislation moving forward that I think would be important for either the SARM Act or the Pasteur Act to move forward. So I think that, I think over time we will eventually get there. I think there has to be a lot of persistence on our part. We will continue to educate and be there whenever the questions arise and continue to push forward on this important issue, because at the end of the day, it's our mother, father, brother, sister, grandmother, grandfather who's waiting for this new technology. And it's not okay, in my view, not to have these innovative products on the shelves ready to dispense. As I said, though, if the current trends continue, we won't have those options.
Yeah, and you make a really good point about looking at COVID-19 and obviously the priority being there for the reasons that we all know. And, it's really this acute pandemic that we've had over the last 2 years that is, as you were saying, taking the wind out of our sails and really become the main priority for understandable reasons. I do wonder if it is something that will need AMR and antibiotic development to have more of an acute happening, if you will, out in the public health space so that it, again, becomes prioritized. So I guess it remains to be seen what will happen there. Just lastly for you, I want to finish on a positive note and thinking about action. And, again, there are some potential solutions and strategies in Congress. And I want to see if you think there's any steps in terms of moving forward or have hope in thinking about antibiotic development and reducing antimicrobial resistance.
Look, I think that there's already in place some very nice stewardship programs that I think really have matured over the last 10 to 15 years. I do think that there is a lot of attention placed every day on the question of, is it the right antibiotic for the right patient at the right time? Today, though, I think that there are not the options that we are used to having in terms of antibiotic choice. And I think those options will continue to fall to the wayside if we don't really help this marketplace. I do think when we look at places where I've seen some very positive, interventions I can mention one of those in terms of a very unique public-private partnership that Paratek has with BARDA out of the U.S. government, specifically for pandemic preparedness as it relates to bioterrorism pathogens. And our particular product, NuZyra, is being developed today because of those those dollars, specifically for pulmonary anthrax. Now, I do think that BARDA or other related agencies could actually then potentially have the opportunity to broaden those kind of public-private partnerships to AMR more broadly for bacterial infections. We're not quite there yet. There's not legislative cover, so to speak, for those particular decisions and allocations of government funding. But I do think these type of public-private partnerships down the road are important positive steps that have come forward. That being said, it's one public-private partnership for one company for one antibiotic, and that does not equal a robust, dynamic marketplace. There needs to be many, many more. And I do think that your prior comment is really important, that with this AMR issue, I look at it as really the silent pandemic. It's the pandemic that's not being discussed today. With the number of deaths that are happening globally, nearly 1.5 million a year that are happening. I think that on an annual basis, with those kind of numbers, it's quite sobering to think about that. And the fact that we will not have the tools in our armamentarium to go forward. So I still remain passionate about what we are trying to do here. I do think our public-private partnership with BARDA is unique and something to consider. We need many more of those type of whole of government type of approaches from HHS, Department of Defense, potentially from BARDA and CDC and other agencies to collectively get together and think about innovative ways to fund this innovative space in order for us to stay ahead of the innovation curve, because we don't want those bugs to win, especially when it comes to our loved ones.
Absolutely. And some really good points again. And I do think, again, I think the U.S. isn't lacking for innovation. It may be just lacking for motivation at the moment. But I want to thank you, Doctor, for taking the time to talk about these important topics today.
Thank you, John. I've enjoyed the conversation very much.
As you heard, Lowe discussed the possibility of an evolving regulatory pathway. He also spoke of the work he and others are involved in with the Antimicrobials Working Group and working with Congress on the Disarm Act. This is an ongoing issue with various moving parts and a need for both the federal government to offer guidance, but also continued innovation by biopharmaceutical companies and a need for the general public to lend support in this area, as it truly does affect everyone. Thank you for joining us today. And if you haven't done so already, check out our growing library of episodes of Contagion Community on the Contagion website or wherever you get your podcasts.